hit well to left field. Travis turns, and Bubba Starling hits the top of the wall and his first Fenway Park home run, just like Mabry's Valoria tonight. This one is worth three, and now it's 7-5 in the eighth inning.
Bubba Starling with a three-run homer, but it wasn't enough for the Royals. And the Royals' young catcher Valoria with his first career home run took place last night as well.
In the air to left. Benintendi turns, and that's gone. And Mabry's Valoria has his first major league home run, and it comes at Fenway Park to the opposite field, and it's 4-2 in the seventh inning.
But the seventh inning was the backbreaker, according to Ned Yost.
It gave us a chance to win the game. You know, what doomed us was the seventh inning. We kept battling back, and, you know, Mac came in the sixth and did a great job of holding the fort right there, and I'm thinking, okay, if we can hold it, we were in pretty good shape. If we could hold it in the seventh, we just couldn't end up giving up the three, which kind of a backbreaker right there.
So the Royals fall to the Red Sox. Losing streak now hits lucky number seven in a row. Red Sox snap their losing streak as Mike Montgomery, a decent start. He went, he stretched out. They're trying to stretch him out as a starter. Went 5+. He did strike out 7, gave up a couple of home runs. And Jacob Junis on the hill for the boys in blue tonight in Boston against the Red Sox in Fenway. Andrew Kashner on the hill for the Red Sox at 6-10 first pitch tonight. Royals now 40-74 on the season. Some good news, Salvador Perez did some light throwing for the first time in catcher's gear yesterday. And Adalberto Mondesi is feeling better, but probably still a few weeks away before he returns. So something to look forward to in the future. If Perez can be back healthy, that'll make the Royals a better team next year. And Mondesi still leads the American League in stolen bases, despite being on the injured list now twice. And he may still end up being the stolen base leader this year. Once he comes back, he'll probably be behind, but could catch up if he can stay healthy. So the Royals, there are some bright spots here and there, but they're just not enough of them. And that's why the Royals are 40-74. Any local sports information, Dusty?
Nothing new today, but again, if you want to check out ncksports.com, read about Autumn Lorenz and Armando Salcedo competing at the Junior AAU Olympics. That's all right there at ncksports.com for you. And we'll continue to have here this month, we'll start getting schedules updated for high school sports, and it's coming before we know it. So we'll be getting ready for the fall sports season for high school.
All right. I hope no one ends up failing a drug test like this. This is pretty interesting. DJ Cooper failed a FIBA drug test. Okay, big deal. You know, athletes fail drug tests. It happens all the time, right? According to EuroHoops and RTV, former Ohio University standout DJ Cooper received a 2-year suspension from FIBA in 2018 after it was revealed that he used his pregnant girlfriend's urine instead of his own to try and pass a drug test. And it showed that she was pregnant. So he was suspended for being pregnant, is what the story says. I didn't know a guy could get pregnant. Well, it's interesting. How about that?
Yeah, that's just not very smart. You know?
No, like, not really. Not
I think, really. Do you know how women take pregnancy tests there, DJ?
Yeah.
That's how they find out. So you probably should not.
I'm guessing he didn't know his girlfriend was pregnant, and that's what caused the problem there.
Man, I would.
Because if he did, that's really stupid.
Yes, like I would really hope that he didn't know.
I would hope.
But if he did, then that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not the right person to do that.
No, not at all. I saw that headline, like, shaking my head going, wow, that's a crazy story. I got to click on this one. Some other notes before we get to the Chiefs. Vince Carter is coming back for his 22nd NBA season. If he plays in January of next year, which would be 2020, Vince Carter would be the first NBA player in NBA history to play in parts of four decades.
Yeah.
It's like, remember Brett? He got 3 batting titles in 3 different decades. That was first that's ever been done. Vince Carter still can play about 13 minutes a game off the bench for the Atlanta Hawks. He's old enough to be Trey Young's dad or grandpa.
Oh, he could be grandpa by
could
now.
Be
yeah.
grandpa by now.
You do the math, you know, it's close.
Yes, it really is. You know, while he's gone, the Houston Astros made a trade and got Zach Greinke on their team. And Zach Greinke, Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, those three pitchers rank in the top five in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So now everybody's going to say the Astros are going to win the World Series, and I'll be willing to say they probably won't. Because when it looks so obvious, the team... Because how many times do you see this? You see teams load up on some starting pitching, but now the game's changed to where when you get in the playoffs, your starting pitcher's out by the seventh inning. He's thrown 110 pitches and labored. You know, I got to go back to the Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling days where two starters could dominate and win a series.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, teams have great... We saw the Royals without great starting pitching win the World Series because of a great bullpen. It comes down to the bullpen. So as long as you have a starter, like we saw there... Well, the Mets had a loaded starting rotation. I mean, they had Jacob deGrom, they had Noah Syndergaard, and they had Matt Harvey, who was awesome at the time. Matt Harvey, we saw what happened. Edison Volquez go 5 2/3, 6 1/3, and he gives up one run on 5 hits, and Harvey... Okay, shuts out the Royals. Big deal. 2-0, and Harvey's got to come out. Oh, wait a minute. He stayed in. Mm-hmm. That was one of the problems there in Game 5 of the World Series for the Mets in 2015. You know, Madison Bumgarner certainly was a starter that dominated the Royals in 2014. But, you know, in a short series, best of 5, which is the first series the Astros will be in as long as they win the division, we see this a lot where teams load up on starting pitching, or we think that's the unbeatable team, and then they lose in the first round in a 5-game. Really, it's a crapshoot still in a 5-game series. And we have one game more than the other team at home if you go 5. But, you know, as Greinke and Verlander and Cole, to me, where that helps them is that they can go deeper in games possibly. So it helps rest their bullpen in a series to where they can keep going to their regular guns in the bullpen instead of having to go to maybe some guys that are a little bit, we got to pitch these guys because this other guy's pitched 2 straight postseason games. So, yeah, does that look good on paper? Yeah, but if the Astros' bullpen's not very good, which it's not bad, by the way, but if it's not good, that's going to negate what those starters did unless they're going to go 9 innings every time out. We know that doesn't happen anymore.
No. That's not going to happen. But
who has the best starting pitching? Well, the Astros
sure,
have the best starting pitching.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily win you playoff games anymore.
No. But, I mean, if you couple that, you get guys go 7 and
sure.
give up 0 or 1 runs, and then they've got a good offense too.
Yeah, right.
So they could get a 4-1 lead by the time their bullpen comes in the 8th inning.
Could be.
You know?
Yeah,
and
but you're also going up against other teams' best pitchers too.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, you're not facing a 4th or 5th starter.
Yeah.
Rarely. So, and we see in the playoffs, usually the offense slows down because you can shorten the game, you can manipulate the game as a manager and get the matchups that you want, and offense typically goes down in the playoffs. So games are typically closer. You don't see a lot of blowouts in the playoffs because you got the best teams with the best pitchers, or at least their best pitchers, going up against one another. And like I said, the Royals are a great example. Edison Volquez, you know, Edison Volquez wasn't a great pitcher, but he could battle Matt Harvey and keep the Royals in the game, be down 1 or 2 runs. If you're within 1 or 2 rounds against the Astros, now you're talking about working the pitch counts. And if you can just, your pitchers hold down the fort, or if you've got a good bullpen, you can, you know, have a starter go 5, 2 innings from the bullpen, go in the 8th inning, you're down 2-1. Suddenly the Astros' advantage doesn't seem so great.
Yeah.
But you have to have decent starting pitching for at least 5 or 6 innings. Well, 5 probably. And you go to the bullpen, first hint of trouble. Because that's just the way the game is now.
Yeah.
You don't see guys go 9. It just didn't happen. I mean, we've got 2 combined no-hitters this year because a guy can't go long enough.
Well, yeah.
Except Mike Fears, he threw 132 pitches, which we know what happened with Gil Mesh, threw 135 pitches.
Yeah.
So they're careful not to overuse these starting pitchers and the money they have invested in them. But I think the Astros, obviously, I thought before they added Greinke, they're still the team to beat in the American League. That was my opinion. You add Greinke, that should make them better. But we see many times over the course of sports history where you get this guy like, oh, my God, they're just loaded. That's just, how are they going to lose? How's anybody going to beat them? And then the next thing you know, they don't win.
Yeah.
So, and there's more pressure, too.
Well, man, I'm guessing they feel like they're trying to do what happened when they went and got Verlander and do it twice. You know?
Sure.
You know, he came in and was really big for them down the stretch there and obviously in the postseason as well, and they won the World Series. So I think that's probably in the back of their mind, too, that this has worked before for them to go get one of these high-end starters at the deadline and maybe
well,
it can
last,
work again.
And then this offseason, they got Garrett Cole, or did they get him late last season? I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
Because, no, they had Garrett Cole last year.
Yeah,
they did this last year, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Yeah.
Because Verlander, they'd run up his pitch count. He'd be out in 7th or maybe early in the 8th. They get to the Astros bullpen, and Garrett Cole was not good in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
I remember the Red Sox hit him around. So you can say it's worked, and it did with Verlander. It didn't work last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, why not keep doing it, though? I mean, it's a good way of going about it. They gave up a lot of prospects for Greinke, but once again, they're just prospects.
And they got him for 2 more years after this,
well, that's
too.
True.
He's
that's
under
true.
Contract for
and
two,
also bumps
2 years
their payroll
after.
And everything yeah. else. But if the owner's willing to pay it, so be it.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk Chiefs football. Training camp continuing up in St. Joe. The Chiefs getting ready for their preseason opener. They'll host the Bengals at Arrowhead at 6 o'clock. It will be our pregame coverage. And kickoff at 7 this Saturday on Z96.3 Lake as the Chiefs take on the Bengals. And, well, let's focus today on, well, we talked about wide receivers yesterday. Let's introduce you to a rookie that, well, he's really fast, but not as fast as Tyreek Hill. He's even said that. Although, who is as fast as Tyreek Hill? Mecole Hardman, the rookie from Georgia, they traded up to get him. Second round, they like him. He can be a good returner. I think they're going to work him in somewhat easily into the offensive sets here and there. He could be the heir apparent to Tyreek Hill if the Chiefs let him walk after this year. Or he could just be an added weapon the Chiefs have in the coming years. And maybe at the end of this year, he might be a key contributor to a team that's maybe, you know, going for a Super Bowl. Mecole Hardman talks about the difference of college and the NFL.
Probably just the speed, faster than college. But other than that, it's football. You know, you play, you learn, you practice, you try to make perfect. So it's all the same thing, just a little faster.
All right, college offenses are evolving, and certainly it was at Georgia. They became more of a passing team, but they still can run the ball very well. And the Chiefs, of course, all kinds of motion. They are a unique offense, especially 15 under center. And Hardman talks about the difference between college and the Chiefs' offense.
Well, it's different. It's definitely a more workload, you know, learning, you know, outside, inside. You know, sometimes in the backfield, like, you moving around, so you just don't know where you're going to be at. And you don't know what personnel is going to be called. And so you got to be ready for anything. You know, you could be an outside receiver, 2 plays, 3 plays in a row, then personnel change, now you in the slot or now you in the backfield. So you never know. Like, it's that's the difference is from college. In college, I knew I was going to be in the slot the whole time, unless it's like a different formation, not personnel-wise, but like different formation. I go to the outside or anything. But in this offense, man, you could be motioning to the left, to the right, from the backfield to the outside. You just don't know. You know, that's why you got to keep everything fresh in your head. And that's why I think, you know, it's kind of hard for guys, you know, because it's so much going on, a lot of motion, like, you know, a lot of things going on. So you just got to keep your mind straight and know what's going on.
So you can focus on one position in college, but when you're the Chiefs, you better learn all the receiver positions.
Well, right now, it's more of all of them now. I think beginning, it was just one position. But as you start progressing through, you know, mini camp, OTAs, mini camp, and then now in training camp, I think you got to start learning more than one position if you want to be on the field. So now it's all 3 positions I'm getting comfortable with, and I'm just keep learning as they go on.
All right, Mecole Hardman, what's it like working with the MVP of the National Football League, Patrick Mahomes?
I said we're in a good time right now. I think our chemistry growing. I think I'm starting to figure out where he want me to be at on the field. I think he's starting to figure me out as a player, my speed, things I like to do at my routes. So I think it's growing. And I think we still got some improving to do before first game. But right now, I think we're solid.
All right. So Hardman has speed, and as long as he can catch the ball, it's another weapon for the Chiefs' offense. But who's going to be protecting Patrick Mahomes and that offense? It starts in the trenches. The offensive line of Chiefs, not considered the best in football, but above average, I think most people would agree. Eric Fisher, who was a Pro Bowler last year, and he was the number one overall pick a few years back, and he's not really been that type of player, but it was a bad draft. That just was the worst year to have a really bad record and be the number one overall pick. Eric Fisher ended up being the number one pick. He has improved over the years, and Fisher talks about working with a veteran offensive line, which will have a new center in Austin Ryder, who played some at center last year. And Mitch Morse signed with the Bills as a free agent. By the way, Mitch Morse in concussion protocol again.
Already
with Buffalo, which that was one of the reasons I said you let him walk, because he already had a history of concussions. So this seems to be the right move by the Chiefs. But Fisher talks about working with this veteran offensive line that seems to have some depth.
Yeah, it's nice when you have a line that's been together a while. The communication actually probably lessens just because we're all on the same page. We see everything as a unit, know what's going on. Obviously, there needs to be a lot of communication still, but, you know, it's just kind of we're all on the same page, go out there, do our thing. And, I mean, this is a great time up here to learn, to make corrections. Everything's not going to be perfect right now. So couldn't be off to a better, faster start, I'd say.
Chiefs are 32 days away from their first game of the season in Jacksonville. And one of the biggest additions they had in the offseason, well, we know Tyrann Mathieu. We know they drafted speed with Hardman. They got Thornhill they like at safety. But the biggest acquisition, certainly in regards to dollars, and probably was the biggest acquisition, Frank Clark, who has had a good camp so far. The trade with the Seahawks, the Chiefs pick up Frank Clark, and Eric Fisher talks about battling with that outstanding defensive player.
Yeah, I hope I'm helping Frank Clark just as much as he's helping me. Obviously a tremendous player, very talented player. So we're bringing it every day, and I think, you know, just we're setting each other up for success once September gets here. So obviously great competition and, you know, just a great opportunity to perfect my craft along with him.
So the Chiefs official, or first unofficial official, whichever way you want to look at it, depth chart came out yesterday. Shocking, but Patrick Mahomes is the first-string quarterback. I was a little bit worried about that. But here are the ones that stood out to me. Running back, Damien Williams is a first-stringer. Carlos Hyde, second string. Darrell Williams, third string. Darwin Thompson, the rookie from Utah State, listed amongst those as fourth string. If you're worried about who the third-string quarterback is, that's Chase Litton.
Yes.
Wide receiver, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, first team. Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, second team. Byron Pringle is behind Mecole Hardman on the depth chart, third string, former K-Stater. Gary Dieter is third string. And tight end is a little bit interesting. Of course, Kelsey, first string. Deion Yelder is second string ahead of Blake Bell, who they picked up as a free agent during the offseason, the former Oklahoma quarterback and Bishop Carroll product out of Wichita. And then on the offensive line, Austin Ryder's your center. And then LDT, Tardif, is your right guard, healthy after the broken leg last year. Mitchell Schwartz, your right tackle. He's a Pro Bowler, of course. Your left tackle is Eric Fisher. But at left guard, it's not Cam Irving. It's Andrew Wiley. They really like him. And then Cam Irving is listed as the second string left tackle, but he can move around. Nick Allegretti, the rookie they drafted at Illinois, is second string at left guard. Abdul Beecham, former K-Stater, is listed third string, which means they don't have a good chance to make this team, is what we're saying. The backup center, Jimmy Murray. Sounds like a comedian. And Khalil McKenzie, who used to be a defensive player, converting to offensive lineman, Reggie McKenzie's son. Of course, Reggie McKenzie played for the Raiders for quite some time, was in the front office for a while. Khalil McKenzie is listed as a backup right guard, so he might play some this year after kind of a year of just trying to learn how to play offensive line. So anything there stand out to you?
Not really. I mean, the tight end, like you said, maybe Blake Bell might have been second string, but he's not like – I don't think he's like – automatically you're thinking he's your second string tight end on any team in the NFL, but just the way the situation is for the Chiefs. But no, there wasn't anything that like really stood out there, because I knew most of that already. You know, Hardman right there on the second team already at wide receiver, I think is probably a good sign, because there's some depth at that position. So yeah, there wasn't anything really that just got me in like, whoa, that's a shocker.
Right, exactly. The defensive... Well, I'm trying to find that, pull it up, the defensive one. Sorensen's still listed as a starting safety along with Mathieu. I'm trying to pull this up because I could find it earlier, the defensive one. I had the offensive one. Really, to me, there was no surprises there. Breland Speaks is second string. And Tanau Pastanau is still listed as second string. There's been talk about how he might not make this team. But take it with a grain of salt, because after the first preseason game, when the bullets are firing, there will be some adjustment on that depth chart. But it is something to talk about, since we haven't had a game.
Yeah, haven't had a game, and we haven't seen what they say about it. We've said all that we want to say about those positions, but now you actually get to see where they have them at and what they're thinking about those positions.
Right. So the Chiefs will have some different starters, certainly on defense, as we know. I remember what it was. Bashard Breland is a corner, is a first stringer, along with Kendall Fuller. And then Charvarius Ward is listed as a backup corner. He's not a starting corner. He's had an up-and-down training camp so far. And then your linebackers, Damian Wilson, who they picked up from the Cowboys, 26 years of age, Hitchens and Raglan. And although I think you're going to see Darren Lee play in place of Raglan at times. He's the one they got. He's a high draft pick from the Jets, but they didn't have to trade much for him to bring him in. and he's pretty good in pass coverage. So there'll be some shaking. Of course, injuries will have a big impact on it as well. So, you know, when I look at the Chiefs roster, we said it a few times before, I think they're deep in some spots. I think running back, they're in better shape than some people may think. I think wide receiver, they're pretty deep. Offensive line, I think they have some versatility there with a few guys. I am a little bit concerned with Ryder at center. What happens if he goes down? Although, yeah. I think they'll put Cam Irving at center is what they'd probably do. And then defensively, I like how the defense is coming together. Of course, we got to wait and see what happens in games. And by the way, if preseason the defense doesn't look that good, let's not freak out. Because Steve Spagnuolo is probably working and messing with some things. And the defense might not even be top-notch, you know, the first few games of the season. But the Chiefs have one of the best offenses of football. And with Tyreek Hill not being suspended at all, they're going to have all their weapons, if they're all healthy, going in that game at Jacksonville. And but I'm excited to see what the defense is going to do and how – I'm more excited about the defense in regards to the scheme and strategy. Because I was so sick of Bob Sutton being so predictable where I knew what they were going to be in, and I'm not that smart. You know, and Bill Belichick and the Patriots knowing exactly what the Chiefs were in before the Chiefs got in it.
Yeah.
Now and the Chiefs still won, almost overcame that. So I'm interested to see, you know, the versatility with Matthew and with Clark, and I'm interested to see how some of these guys that are holdovers from last year's defense perform in the new defense. You know, how's Chris Jones going to be used in this new defense in the 4-3? I'm interested to see if Anthony Hitchens has a much better year than last year because he struggled at times last year.
Yeah.
And he was a high-priced pickup. I'm interested to see what Darren Lee or Damian Wilson, younger linebackers that weren't great where they were, but maybe in this system will be even better. And I'm really excited to see the Thornhill kid at safety. I've heard really good things. And then I think the thing I'm maybe most interested in with the defense of Steve Spagnuolo, new defensive coordinator, is where Tyrann Mathieu is going to line up. Last year he lined up in 9 different defensive positions. He even lined up as a nose guard once. I just really am fascinated by the versatility of this team where you can move guys around, and that's what excites me about this defense. And in the past, it's like, oh, hey, Marcus Peters is on an island. He's always on that side. We always know where we can go with the football. Oh, hey, what do you know? Here's the blitz. Rarely used. It's coming from the same side every time. I'm looking forward to some freshness to this defense with scheme and strategy.
Yeah, without question.
Yeah. And it's been well overdue.
You talk about, you know, the depth chart with the defensive back position. It's like, I don't even look at the depth chart right now.
I'm not too worried about it.
Who are those guys aren't even going to be playing in the positions they're listed half the time, on the depth chart? Because he can move Thornhill. If you want Matthew to move somewhere else, you can put Thornhill at a safety. And if you want Matthew at safety, you can probably put him in a corner at times.
Mm-hmm.
And Kendall Fuller's listed as first string corner, but we already know he's going to play the slot.
More,
you know, he's going to be the nickel. Mm-hmm. So you know that Breland and probably Ward are going to be out there together.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
it depends
tell
on
me the depth chart if you want about defensive backs. But
it depends on your package.
Yeah, and like
nickel
I was talking about last week at one point, you know, most of the time you're at least running the nickel, so Kendall Fuller is going to be out there most of the time.
Yeah, right.
You know, against these passing offenses in this league. So,
yeah.
That's what's interesting to me is, like, they have all those things listed, but how often are they actually going to be playing in the positions they're in on the depth chart?
Yeah, they're going to have a 5-man defensive front, a 4-man, a 3-man. I mean, you know, they're going to switch it up. You know that. They're going to have 5 corners. They're going to have 6 defensive backs. I mean, it is more of a passing league, as we know. We know in this division, the Raiders are going to like to throw it. We know that the Chargers like to wing it. Melvin Gordon's still holding out, which I think the Chargers will be fine even without Melvin Gordon myself. And we just know teams like to spread it out. There's not too many smash-mouth football teams. The Ravens would be one of those, and that's a team that gives everybody else trouble because you're not really used to seeing it too much. So.